Genesis 49 is called in most Bibles the blessings of Jacob. And to be sure, there are some blessings contained in the chapter, but there are also some cursings. One commentator observes, the chapter is usually described as the blessings of Jacob, but it is obviously quite inaccurate to describe it in this way, since the predictions about several of the sons are characterized by the very reverse of blessing. The chapter is rather to be understood as a prediction of the results of character, consists at once of a review of the past and a foresight of the future in light of that past. Genesis 49 is the story of the final grade each son of Israel gets for his work in life. Jacob is about to die, and he's giving each son his final grade. And these pronouncements are prophetic, they are personal, and they are eternal. The believer's earthly and heavenly rewards are determined by his earthly actions. Once one comes into a family of God, one has a new life. Once one has this new life, he can commit himself to remain faithful to God or commit himself to not remain faithful to God. And so we see all sons are called to face their individual judgment. Look at chapter 49 of Genesis and verses 1 and 2. Then Jacob called his sons and said, "Gather yourselves together, that I may tell you what shall happen to you in the days to come. Assemble and listen, O sons of Jacob. Listen to Israel, your father." A guy named John Phillips said, "So we see Jacob's sons gathered about his bed. We view the scene as the judgment seat of Jacob, and it prefigures the judgment seat of Christ. Lives are brought up for review, and rebukes and rewards are meted out. Who is been sowed must be reaped, and hidden things are exposed and judged, and open things are praised and punished. There's a place and a kingdom at stake for each one, and each one is weighed in light of that. And this judgment was given when all the sons were gathered together. All of Jacob's children are gathered together to hear the assessment of each other's judgment. The entire family was at the bedside of Jacob. No one was left out, and no one was left untouched by judgment, and no one was left unrewarded. And when it comes to time for judgment, we shall be known as we were known. The whole family of God will see it. And this judgment was given to all sons concerning the last days." And here's the first place in the Bible where these words referred to the last days are being used. The Hebrew words "days to come" refers to the extreme latter part, which often has to do with God's futuristic prophetic program. And these words refer to many things in the Bible, to the end of the power for Gentile nations, to the end of the church age, to the final resurrection for both believer and unbeliever, to the first coming of Jesus Christ, to God's final program and status for Israel, which features her rebellion and the tribulation, the regathering of the nation, and the second coming of Jesus Christ. Obviously, this phrase is connected to the last things pertaining to Israel. Jacob is pronouncing the way it will be when each tribe is judged by Jesus Christ at his second coming. These judgments are a picture of the way it will be when Israel enters into her millennial kingdom. And the complete fulfillment of these prophecies will occur after the tribulation during the millennium. And some sons will lose reward because of instability and immorality. Look at this in verses 3 and 4 of chapter 49. "Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, and the firstborn, first fruits of my strength, preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power. Unstable as water, you shall not have preeminence, because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. You went up to my couch." The first son to be named for judgment was Reuben, the firstborn of Jacob. Reuben represents the first to come into the family. He had all of the potential and power to become a magnificent son, but he did not use his strength and might to become this. He dedicated himself to his own ambitions and lusts and became an embarrassing son. The words of verse 3 poetically describe Jacob's firstborn. He had position, being the firstborn. He had power. He had preeminence and might and strength and dignity. He potentially had it all. But verse 4 makes it clear that the way Reuben looked was not the way it really was. He was not unmovable. He was unstable. He was not spiritually dignified. He was sinfully defiled. And he was unstable. That word uncontrolled is an interesting word. In the original, it refers to unstable water that leaps and surges. This particular word was often used to describe boiling water. Reuben had a character that was unstable, boiling one minute and cold the next. He could leap and surge into the things of God and then simmer down and forget them. As a result, he lost his rewards. And he was immoral. Some 40 years before this judgment, Reuben had committed terrible immorality with his father's concubine, Bilhah. In all that time, Reuben never dealt with his sin. There's no record of him confessing it to God or making things right with his father. Reuben apparently tried to sweep this under the carpet, thinking it had all been forgotten, but it hadn't. And on this judgment day, his sin was fully exposed and punished. Once one gets into God's family, sexual immorality takes on a new dimension of eternal significance. For the believer, the sin of sexual immorality is at the very unique level. Reuben types still have time to change. If we judge ourselves, we shall not be judged. Deal with sin as a child of God. Confess it. Claim God's cleansing grace. But we may all know that beyond any shadow of doubt, if we refuse to judge ourselves, we will be judged at the judgment seat of Jesus Christ. And this chapter is a chapter of judgment. Many years before this chapter, literally many miles before, Jacob's sons had done certain things. Some of those things were very positive, but all sons were judged, and what each son had done previously in his life determined this future destiny. And so we see Reuben being confronted, but then we see some sons lose rewards because they react emotionally and violently. Look at verses 5 and 6. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Weapons of violence are their swords. Let my soul come not into their counsel. O my glory, be not joined to their company. For in their anger they killed men, and in their willfulness they hamstrung oxen. There are those in God's family who are emotional reactionaries. They have temper explosions, and they do not care if they destroy others. And that's the case of Simeon and Levi. The background for this judgment is Genesis 34. Shechem wanted to marry Dinah after he had raped her. Dr. S.L. Johnson sets the historical situation well. The historical background of this section is the incident recorded in chapter 34, the slaughter of the men of Shechem and the spoiling of the city because Shechem, the son of Hamor, had taken Dinah, the daughter of Leah, and defiled her by illegal intercourse. Obviously, Genesis 34 was not viewed by Jacob as being a holy war. He viewed it as a ruthless vengeance. And because of this violent temper tantrum, both lost their rewards. They were brothers. Simeon and Levi were the family of God. And what this tells us is possible for those in the family of God to have violent tempers. Simeon and Levi types are not deeply spiritual, but they are extremely emotional. And they were cruel. The words instruments of violence mean they were violent men. In fact, the word cruel is one that indicates these two would violently oppress and injure others and would even use sacred instruments like circumcision knives or anything else as a weapon. And they were angry. The word anger is one that means that these two become so angry that it would affect their breathing and facial expressions. We see it says, "Cursed be their anger, for it's fierce and their wrath, for it's cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel." They were self-willed. The idea of being self-willed is the idea of doing things because it satisfies, delights, or pleases self. Simeon and Levi were not interested in doing what pleased God, but their own will. And they were fierce. The word fierce is one that means these were strong, fortified, and firm men. This word is the opposite of being flexible, teachable, and pliable. They would not bend. And they were wrathful. The Hebrew word wrath is intriguing because it literally refers to a boiling heat in their mind and heart. This word refers to the two were always angry or mad at something or someone. Hot-tempered, angry people have a mind problem and a heart problem. They are self-centered, not God-centered. Jacob never wanted to be like Simeon and Levi. He actually prayed that his soul would not be like theirs. He pronounced his judgment that they would be divided and scattered and not receive any specific inheritance of their own. Simeon ended up scattered within the family of Judah. They did not have an inheritance of their own, but shared one with Judah. Levi was scattered all over Israel and did not have any inheritance either, but shared in that of Israel. An interesting postscript to the story of Levi. The Levites took a strong stand against idolatry and as a result were allowed by God to become the priestly family. It is possible to change and there's still time. If you have a temper problem, deal with it. Confess it to God. Make decisive choices to yield to God's spirit, not yours. Seek God's will, not your will. And so we see that this chapter is a chapter of accountability. It's a chapter of judgment. And then we see that some sons are rewarded with great leadership positions because of their faithfulness in dealing with sin and sacrificing for others. Look at verses 8 through 12. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's cub. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He stooped down. He crouched as a lion and as a lioness who dares rouse him. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until tribune comes to him. And to him shall be the obedience of the peoples, binding his foal to the vine and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He has washed his garments in wine and his vesture in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine and his teeth whiter than milk. In eternity, there will be great positions of leadership held by those faithful in life. And in this text, it's revealed that in eternity, Judah will be the most honored tribe in Israel. Well, what exactly did Judah do to earn these rewards? Well, Judah was certainly no sinless saint. He was the fourth son of Leah, and he had been somewhat of a womanizer, as illustrated by the episode with Tamar, who pretended to be a prostitute. But there are three qualities that made him an award winner. He was a brother who looked out for the welfare of other brothers. While the rest of the brothers were looking out for their own self-centered interests, Judah was looking out for Joseph. He was a brother who honestly admitted and judged his own sin. When he realized he had committed immorality with Tamar, he judged himself and did not try to make excuses or explanations, nor did he try to cover his sin. He dealt with it and never did it again. He was a brother willing to sacrifice his own life for his brother. Jacob knew he could trust Judah with Benjamin, and when it was all on the line, Judah would sacrifice his own life for him. And that's the key to eternity award winners, is they dealt with sin, confessed it, turned from it, and they will have invested their lives for others. One who covers sin or is content in sin and only looks out for self will never be a great award winner in God's eternity. What were the rewards that got Judah earned? Judah would be the son of the highest rank. The tribe selected by God to produce his son will be esteemed in rank forever by all brothers. And Judah would be the son of victorious conquering. No enemy will have dominated Judah, but he will have had the enemy by the throat. And Judah would be esteemed by the other brothers. 1 Chronicles 5:2 says, Judah prevailed over his brothers, and from him came the leader. And Judah will be a mighty son. Two courageous, mighty leaders came from Judah, David and Jesus Christ. And Judah will be a judge. Shiloh is a specific place, and it has a specific person, a specific rest giver, and it's Messiah. The idea is that Judah will be recognized as the tribe which comes, rules right up until the Messiah comes, who will judge the world and give rest to the world. And Judah would be a rewarded son, one that has the best of everything, the choicest vines, and he was willing to suffer and sacrifice in life, which earned him all of this. One may lose rewards because of instability. One may lose rewards because of immorality. One may lose rewards because of uncontrollability. One may lose rewards because of cruelty. One may earn rewards because of honesty. One may earn rewards because of victory. And one may earn rewards because of sacrifices. And so we see that a child of God's future inheritance and rewards in eternity will be determined by his faithful or unfaithful character on earth. We see that Reuben lost his inheritance. Simeon and Levi lost their inheritance. Judah earned a great inheritance because of his honesty and self-sacrifice. But then we see the judgment of Zebulun. Verse 13, Zebulun shall dwell at the shore of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall be at Sidon. Zebulun was the 10th son of Jacob, the 6th son born to Leah. Scripture does not give us a great deal of information about him or his work. We know he had 3 sons who were founders of key Israeli families destined to enter the Promised Land. We also know that during the tribulation there will be 12,000 for this tribe singled out by God to accomplish his program. The judgment of Zebulun is very positive. He will have a full inheritance along the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. There's nothing spectacular about Zebulun. He was a quiet, faithful, common, ordinary son who ended up with a great inheritance. You do not have to be an impressive preacher or evangelist or foreign missionary to earn great rewards. Zebulun types end up highly rewarded because they were quiet, stable, faithful family members. And then we see the judgment of Issachar. Look at verse 14 and 15. Issachar is a strong donkey, crouching between the sheepfolds. He saw that a resting place was good and that the land was pleasant. So he bowed his shoulder to bear and became a servant at forced labor. Issachar represents the lazy son who loses reward because he's too lazy to do his work. He's pictured as a strong donkey that is lying down between 2 sheepfolds. He saw the burdens and need, but was too lethargic and unambitious to do anything about it. As a result, he will not be a manager, but a servant. In eternity, there will be many Issachar types who were in the church but didn't do much of anything to help it move forward. There are all kinds of needs and opportunities, but Issachar types just take it easy and they'll lose their rewards. Then we see the judgment of Dan, verses 16 through 18. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a viper by the path that bites the horse's heels so that his rider falls backward. I wait for your salvation, O Lord. Dan is like a serpent, a very crafty, behind-scenes type person. Dan can stop a large opponent, able to face and stop an intimidating enemy. And Dan waits in the Lord. Dan type depend on God, not themselves. A Dan type is a son who is faithful behind the scenes and quietly goes about his business. But when faced with intimidating enemies, he does not back down and depends on God to stop them. Some view this as a negative judgment and go so far as to say the Antichrist will come from Dan's line. However, the language of this judgment is positive. He is a judge and waits on the Lord. We see the judgment of Gad in verse 19. Raiders shall raid Gad, but he shall raid at their heels. The language describes one who gets overcome by enemies but eventually overcomes them. Gad types eventually finish winners, but they have their share of setbacks. For a while, enemies seem to get the upper hand on the Gad type, but eventually they get their life together and finish a winner. And then we see the judgment of Asher, verse 20. Asher's food shall be rich, and he shall yield royal delicacies. The words royal delicacies seem to suggest that Asher used his fruitful prosperity to serve and minister for and to the king. And Asher types will have used their prosperity on earth to lay up for themselves treasures in heaven. Asher types were prosperous believers, and they used their prosperity for the king. And then we see the judgment of Naphtali in verse 21. Naphtali is a doe let loose that bears beautiful fawns. Naphtali types really have a good control of their speech. They're known for communicating the beautiful and good words of God. They're as graceful as a doe in their ability to communicate. And then we see the judgment of Joseph, verses 22 through 26. Joseph is a fruitful bough, by a spring. His branches run over the wall. The archers bitterly attacked him, shot at him, and harassed him severely. Yet his bow remained unmoved. His arms were made agile by the hands of the mighty one of Jacob. For there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. By the God of your father who will help you, by the Almighty who will bless you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that crouches beneath, blessing of the breasts and of the womb. Blessings of your father are mighty beyond the blessings of my parents. Up to the bounties of the everlasting hills, may they be on the head of Joseph and on the brow of him who is set apart from his brothers. Joseph is described as having an extremely fruitful life. Verse 26 describes the fact that Joseph had been given blessings by God that were way above and beyond that of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. As you look down through these verses, you see that Joseph was abundantly fruitful, severely attacked, divinely empowered, divinely helped, divinely blessed, and divinely honored. Joseph represents the godly, faithful son who stands for what is right and suffers for it. He continues to stay close to God and faithful to God and eventually ends up highly honored. And then we lastly see the judgment of Benjamin. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf, in the morning devouring the prey, and in the evening dividing the spoil. Benjamin is a son who is diligent to provide for his own and then shares the rest with others. Benjamin types are not stingy, they are generous. In eternity, they are honored as those who were very giving. And then all these are the 12 tribes of Israel. This is what their father said to them as he blessed them, blessing each with the blessing suitable to him. And this verse informs that every blessing was appropriate for each one for what they had or had not done. Each received or lost an inheritance based upon what had been done. Someday, each of us will be called to face judgment. Each of our names will be called, and we will give our own individual account of ourselves to God. We will receive exactly what is appropriate, which will mean we either win rewards or lose them. And what we do here and now on earth has far-reaching further ramifications in eternity. That clearly is a lesson of Genesis 49.